is something that's quoted in many Svarim. This is a very famous story. Page Reish Hey. Reish Hey Halacha. Reish Lamed Beis. Page Reish, we're still discussing the idea. Normally we go very quickly to a new topic, but over here we're still on the same topic of fasting. Of fasting on the yard site. Still discussing this topic. Reish Halacha Reish Lamed Beis. It's on page Reish Hey. Mihikihine, Maisa Rav Sadia ben Yosef, Hechacham. Okay, there was a fellow whose name was Sadia ben Yosef, Hechacham. I don't know who this is. Be'echad, is Rav Sadia gone? I don't think so. He was Rav Sadia gone. He lived not that much longer after Rav Sadia gone, but he says Rav Sadia ben Yosef, Hechacham. Maybe it is. Be'echad shalach lemedina sayam, someone in this sayam, im avdoi with his servant. V'hoylich imoy mamon gadol. This fellow who went to Medina Sayyam, he took with him an enormous amount of money. V'ishto chaysa muberes. And his wife was pregnant. L'yamim, I guess that means that he's left his wife home. I'm assuming it means he left his wife home. L'yamim meis ha'adoin v'iniach kol mamon v'halach. The end was the master died. And the master did not expect to die suddenly. And he had with him all of his wealth. So the slave took the money. V'iniach kol mamon. And he told the people in Medina Sayyam, they don't know the difference. They said, here I am, look, I have here all of the identification papers. I am the son of this fellow who has traveled here. And the proof is, a father, how do I have all this money? My father gave it to me. So he masqueraded as being the son of this person who died. Truth was, he was not the son, obviously. And this fellow left over a pregnant wife. The wife later, of course, gave birth, and there was a real son. And the real son grew up and figured out what happened. And he wanted his money back. He wanted the Yerusha. He wanted the money from his father, from the estate. When the child that was left home was born and grew up, he wanted the money. Not only, look at this, rabbis, not only did this slave claim he was the son, he used that false information to get a shidduch, or do a good shidduch. He married someone who otherwise would never have been taken him as a son-in-law. A slave? My daughter? No way. But he was fooled. He thought over here that he was the son of this person.
At the bottom of the Chris Salem, I think it says this story happened in the time of Shlomo HaMelech.
Called Sadia ben Yosef, HaChacham. Okay, could be. Maybe there's another, a similar story.
It's a couple of lines.
B'sev, b'sev, ma'asiyos, ka'atan, b'fus, yosh, anav, hevi, ma'is, zeh, because of Shom Shir Bimei Shlom HaMelech, okay? Shir Bimei Shlom HaMelech HaLashom V'Harav Ma'arav Ma'adamay Shehevi Ma'is HaZek Ma'am Shkoz Rabbein HaRav HaRav Elia Rabba Hira Alzeh Mibasra V'loi Koshem Midi V'chin Ramaz Huzal Ayin Shem. Okay, fine, whatever. V'yor Yaben Liftoyach Pen Yahargu. And then what happened? He went and he married into this family. Whoever thinks that you can't fool, cannot manipulate and fool Gedolei Hadar, you're living in a world of fantasy. You say, if the Gedolei Hadar believe something, it must be that the person was Emes, right? If a Gedolei Hadar gives a haskama on something, it must be that it's Emes. It's not possible to fool the Gedolei Hadar. You believe that? It's not possible to bribe Gedolei Hadar. If you believe that it's not possible to bribe Gedolei Hadar and to manipulate them, I'm sorry, Rabbi Isai. You're living in a world of fantasy. You can fool everyone all of the time, but you can fool some people some of the time.
We think.
Shabsai Tzvi. Shabsai Tzvi was able to fool a lot of people that we accept to be from the greatest Gedolei Hadar. It's a fact. He was able to fool them. So it could be different.
He didn't fool him.
He had hopes that he would result.
Yeah, but in other words, he didn't see through.
No, it's not necessary. He became corrupt. The Bar Kokhba appears to be really should have been, could have been. It's just that something went wrong at the end. but he was on target. He was going down the right path. Whatever happened, Shabbosai Tzvi was a fraud from the beginning, from day one.
Isn't there somebody who made a statue having a
kutchim
that never existed?
Yeah. And he fooled the Chofetz Chaim. There was someone that when they put together, there's no Talmud Bavli on Talmud Yushalmi. No Talmud Yushalmi on kutchim. Mm-hmm. And there was a person who's super brilliant who was able to forge and make-believe Talmud Yushalmi on a certain Masechtas. And he fooled a lot of Gedolei Hadar. So there was one Gadol that read through the whole thing and he said it's a fake. How do you know it's a fake? So he said a tremendous chiddush. He says every Masechta has a Tana, there's a Mesorah, a Tana that does not appear anywhere else in any other Masechta. And this Masechta, I went through the entire thing from beginning to end, and I can't find any new Tana that was not mentioned in any other Masechta. So it's a fake. That was the smoking gun. It's amazing. You have such a, you can do something like that. There was a very, I don't remember who this was, a certain rebbe, I don't know who it was. I'll probably say about different rabbis, where they took a guy. There was an Eluyasha guy in the neighborhood. And they taught him Mishnayis Baal Peh, for photographic memory, and they taught him Mishnayis Baal Peh, and they took him in with all the other kinderlach to be tested by the Rebbe, the Mishnayis. They took him into the Rebbe, and the Rebbe, and he said the Mishnayis Baal Peh, and the Rebbe tested him, and then when it was over, the Rebbe said, that kid there, something was wrong with him. What do you mean? He knew everything inside out. He says, he didn't shuckle. Mm. He didn't shuckle. He didn't shuckle. When he said, all the other kids, when they say this Mishnayis, they shuckle. He didn't shuckle. There's something wrong. And he was a guy. He was a guy. They try to fool the Rebbe, but of course, it's a famous story. So you see, there are things that come out. You can't fool everyone, or you can fool people most of the time, but you can't fool everyone all the time. In any event, this fellow over here went, he was able to fool the Gedolei, however it says over here, and he married into a very prestigious family, and now the son arrived from Medina Sayyam. He never thought the son would ever materialize. He didn't even know maybe that his wife was pregnant. And now the son was born. He figured out the whole thing. He came to Medina Sayyam, and he wants all the money. He comes over here, V'hoya yorei ha-ben l'vtoch piv, pen yahargu. Now look at this. He was silenced. That the son wanted to open up his mouth and say, this is a fraud. This fellow here who married your daughter is not really a Jew, whatever he was. He's a slave. He took all my father's money, but he was afraid to open his mouth because he was very powerful. He would have called the mafia, and he would not wake up the next morning. Pen yahar guhu. So what did he do? V'nis asken bebeis Rav Sadia. What he did was he hid out. The son went. He took lodging in the home of Rav Sadia, the niach lefan of lechol, and Rav Sadia gave him dinner. V'lo yochal ad, and he didn't eat. In other words, he was very bitter. And Rav Sadia says, "What's wrong? Why come you're not eating? Ma kora? Why are you so sad? What's wrong?" Ad shesam lefanov elu hadvarim, and he told Rav Sadia the whole story. Rav Sadia says he told him the whole story. So Rav Sadia told him, okay, let's find a solution. Let's go to the king. And so he did. Shalach HaMelech, Ach Rav Sadia, Ladun Din Zeh, V'tziv Rav Sadia, L'hakiz Dam, Zeh B'seifel Echad, V'dam Zeh B'seifel Acher. And Rav Sadia gave the command. He did forensic, he did a DNA test. You see, this was before the days of DNA. This is the right volume. Yashukach. David, thank you. And he went and he took out two, he took a blood sample. A blood sample. Can you imagine over here if this story, Rabbi Yeski said this story took place in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech had a laboratory. He was able to do this. V'dam b'sev lecha, v'loch etzim, he took a bone. Shel avi haben. How do you want to do this? They went, they dug up the body of the dead. They dug up a bone. And they v'niach b'seif el ho'eved, and they put the bone into the bowl of the blood of the slave. V'loy nivla hadam. Different blood types. V'lokach ha'etzem b'sam oisla b'sefal ha'bein. V'nivla ha'dam bo'etzem. Ki hu guf echad. I really wonder if they done today scientific tests, if this is true. Okay, well, DNA. Well, we do know. Also, we do know. Rahman with someone, whenever a person goes for. Exactly. Why? Because Witaka rejects. So obviously, saying this concept was known to them to a degree, whatever, the bones absorbing the blood. The Lokach, based upon forensic testing, Rav Sadia was Moitzi Maman. This Nogi Halacha Lemaisa. Okay, is this enough to kill a person? Absolutely not. To kill a person, you'd have to have two witnesses to see the murder with your own eyes. Is forensic circumstantial evidence enough to be might say mamon? Yes. Okay. OJ. OJ? He killed his wife in cold blood. Right? So what happened to him? He got off on murder, but on mamon they got him. On Mammon, circumstantial evidence was enough to convict him that they took away all of his money, but not to put him away for murder. So now, that is the story. Okay, it's a fascinating story. Like I just told you, it's a story which all the Pesukim cite as the makar that circumstantial evidence is enough to be moitzi mamon in Bezdin. Tremendous chiddush. Because if not for this story, you would say, if you want to go and you want to, I want my money back. I want my money back. You're a ganef. You stole my money. How do you know? You have witnesses? You have witnesses? Where are your witnesses? I don't have witnesses. Why? Because of some circumstantial evidence? That's enough for you to go. The coincidence is too strong, or there's some, whatever, tapes. There's some recording, or there's some trace. We'll trace it online. We'll go, we'll have the city. It happens to be, you'd say you were not present at the crime scene. Well, according to New York State, your easy pass on your car happened to be registered when you went over the bridge, the George Washington Bridge, on that day, 10 minutes before this event happened. And you're claiming on that day you were sitting in the Beis Medrash in Koilah. You were in the Koilah at that time where your easy pass is registered crossing the George Washington Bridge. So there are no witnesses that you were present. It's circumstantial evidence. That easy pass was registered crossing the bridge. It's good enough. Circumstantial evidence is enough to be Moitzi Mammon, and here is a case in point. He was Moitzi Mammon based upon forensic testing. V'chein Amos. So now, what is he coming to use this for?
They can't prove you were there, you prove your car was there.
So then you need a little bit more. Right. Once the car was there, we go the next step.
You can't get points on your ticket.
Here we go, the next step. Okay, obviously, you can combine a collection of things that come together to paint a picture that you are the perpetrator of this crime. You are the guilty party. Is it testimony? Are there two witnesses who saw you put your hands and take the money into your pocket? No, there are not. But you have enough data, enough information, we have evidence indicated you did it, and that's enough. You create a threshold which the Bezdin feels is sufficient, and that is enough to demand that you pay up. We might see mammon from your possession and give it back to the other party. That's an incredible chiddush. I just read Rav Meir gave me this incredible book. This book called Incredible. Kishmei Kahu. Incredible. You gotta read the book. It's not real. It's not real, this book. And it talks about Pete, the parrot, the African gray. It's a bird. I never knew that these birds, they can live 100 years. The African gray can live 100 years. The stories in that book are just not real. And one of the stories he has of this, how basically his bird was involved in Kiryat Rechaikim. This guy Wallace had a bird, we call it a parrot, it's called whatever, it's an African prey, and it knew how to say, it just imitated everything he did in the family. Shalom Aleichem, it would say Baruch Hashem, it knew the whole religious vocabulary. And Vayihi Hayoim, it ran away. It ran away, and it was gone for a long period of time. and someone found it, and became very connected to it, the new front, and it was discovered that he had his bird, and now he wants it back. Now there are no identification marks on a bird. There was no DNA. There's nothing you can possibly do to prove that this bird belongs to me, or Wallace, versus the person who found it. Nothing. However, when they took the bird into Wallace's house, and it sees his wife, and the bird says, you know, they sees all the children, and it calls all the children by their names, and it calls the father and the mother, and does all of these things that there's no way in the world can it have done had it not been living in that house for many, many years. That is circumstantial evidence. There's no evidence, there's no proof, there's no blood sample, there's nothing that's unique, distinguishing feature about this bird that can prove that it belonged to this family. But the fact that when this guy's children walk in front of the bird calls the children by their names, is that not enough to identify that this bird was the property of so-and-so? Now in Beis Din, is that a real, can you kill a person based upon that? No way. That's not called Eidos, but that is circumstantial evidence, which is more than enough to prove that you are correct. Okay, now what do we need with this? Where are we going with this, with this concept here? So he follows through now. We're coming over to discuss the concept that a child has to fast for his father. He wants to use this story to indicate. Now he doesn't follow through. This is what's very cryptic about the Sefer Chassidim. He compares A to B, and he leaves you in a state of bewilderment. What? What did you just say? A very nice story, and because of this story, that's why a child should observe the yard side of his father. What? What is that? My inyan shmita etzel har Sinai. What is one to do with the other? I don't have a good answer, but obviously what he means to say is, your father is your blood. You're one. Ki adam hu hanefesh. Something along those lines. Blood is not just DNA. Blood is the neshama of a person. The fact that we see over here the connection between etzem e'atzamai, basam e'besari, you're one with your father. Therefore, on the day that a person's father died, it's you. It's as if you died. It's a chelik of yourself. And therefore, a person has a responsibility, or not just responsibility, it's a reality that today is your day. It's a day that you should feel the obligation to fast, or he writes here, sheyis atzev, to be sad. To be sad, b'yoy misas aviv. We had a discussion yesterday in America. We live with this thing, which is not necessarily k'neged halacha, it's not necessarily wrong, but by the goyim, the secular goyim, who have no religion, there's no such thing as mourning. A funeral is a celebration of life. Person dies, he's gone, family comes together, and they celebrate the life of the deceased. This is what he enjoyed, this is what he did, this was his life. It's a hashlama. His life is over, he accomplished what he was supposed to accomplish here in this world, let's now celebrate his life. Is this a Torah hashkafa? I really don't know. Not for me to say. One thing is clear, that by a funeral we're not supposed to do this. A funeral is not the time to celebrate the life of the deceased. It's a time of din. It's a time when the neshama is going to Shemayim and he's going to be subject to din, for his, if he was Mekayim, what he was supposed to be Mekayim. It's a Yom HaDin. The time of Shiva is also a time of din. You definitely, unfortunately, you see that this has trickled down into our society, into the religious world. When someone by a funeral makes a joke, what are you making a joke at a funeral? What does that come to? That happens all the time. That was by the most religious. Even my Haredim. Haredi funerals, I've seen it. Make jokes. They make jokes. Even Rabbanim make jokes. Okay? They make jokes by funerals. person was 100, the person was 99 years old, okay, 99 years old, a good life, a lot of children, and he accomplished quite a bit. You got to die eventually, right? So a person, so they don't feel the choymer hadavar, and no one's crying by the levaya, and so they say something a little funny, and it makes everyone laugh a little bit, whatever it is. So what is that? That's basically a geisha thing of to celebrate his life.
It's
Shiva, certainly, it's trickled down into our society. Even if you'll say that the funeral is avelus, it's very, very rare to walk into a Beis Avel and to feel mourning. Today, in the Beis Avel, most of the time, you know, it's a celebration. It's a celebration of life, which is not the time for it. Is there such a thing, should come a point in time when we commemorate a person that we should celebrate his life like a goyim do? Maybe, I don't know, maybe there is such a thing at a certain point in time, but not during the funeral and not during the Shiva and not on the first yard site. These are times of din. Chazal say there's something called din, this din. Maybe if it's 10 years later, it's 25 years later, maybe there is such a thing. I don't know, maybe there is. Only reason why I'm saying this now is because the Sefer Chassidim, who knew a lot more than we'll ever know, writes here, Hare Roy Laben Sheyis Atzev. It's an amazing statement. He's saying here, on the day of the yard site, you should be sad. He doesn't say you should celebrate. Doesn't say this principle of celebration of life. We don't necessarily paskin like everyone. We always say that. He has ideas that we do not always accept. That's a fact. But he does say something very powerful. It's fitting on the day of a yard site to be sad. The word sad has no place in a celebration. And that's the lesson. He said, you did not close the doors of my womb. Now, what does that mean? V'loy omar beten imi. What's that expression mean? Shehakol kiguf echot. He says over here that Eoiv, when he's describing his birth, he was complaining.
Also, I mean, the Lamud Nisan says that the reason for sitting Shiva and the way you treat it is to be, to recognize God. Humans were created on the last day of creation, and out of respect to God who created life, we mourn, just like before God brought the flood on the world. It says, why he's not saved,
Eliboy, sadness.
He's sad, and he's supposed to be sad because it took 7 days to create life, so now we observe Shiva because the life was lost.
Okay. Now here, Eov here is complaining, why was I born? Why, Hashem, did you put me in this world to suffer? And he says, it would have been a lot better if you left the doors of my mother's womb shut so that I would die inside and be a stillborn. And he says, Rebbe, you didn't do that. You opened up the doors, you pushed me out of my mother's womb to come into this world and suffer. He's writing over here an expression, you did not sogar dalsay the doors bitne. What he really means to say is you did not close the doors of my mother's womb. You allowed me to enter into this world. But the correct word that he should have said was kiloy sogar dalsay imi, of my mother. That's what he's describing. Why then did he say change word imi to bitne my beten? Why my beten? And the answer is because there's no difference between you and your mother. You and your mother are one. So when you want to describe your mother, you can describe your mother by describing yourself. And that incidentally teaches us that when a mother passes away, it's yourself, your own death. And that's why it's fitting to mourn. Shakol keguf echot. Another example. In Eoif, Vayekalel es Yoimoi, he cursed es Yoimoi. Now that refers to the day that he was born. What do you mean Yomo? That's for his mother. The day that his mother, the context of the pasuk is the day that his mother gave birth to him. So why doesn't it say Vayikal es yoim asher hoyled imoy? Why does he put it on himself? Basically, when my mother gave birth, I gave birth. I am one with my mother. And therefore, the nafkamina is, the difference is that when the mother dies, you died. It's your own death. And therefore, if it's you, if you're dying yourself, it's fitting to be sad and not celebrate. V'yirmiya kain asa. He did the same thing. Shela oilam l'shana haba ba'osayim l'hoya sameach. Lekach Yirmiya did the same exact thing. What does it mean? What do you mean on the same day? I think what he means over here is the korban. I'm not sure. They say over here on the side what he means over here. The Yirmiya did the same thing. The Yirmiya on the Ratzalai Mar Kevan Shama Anushu Avavav Vimayhin Guf Echad. Yirmiya also. Yirmiya the same exact thing. Referring to he cursed the day that he was born. There's a description in Yirmiya in the beginning of Yirmiya. We learned that here together. Where Yirmiya he cursed the day that he was born. Why did you allow me to come into this world? Yirmiya was tormented. He was suffered abuse. They tried to assassinate him, poison his food. They threw him into a dungeon. They tried many, many ways to kill him. So Yirmiya was a very frustrated person, and he was very sad that he came into this world. He cursed his day. What do you mean his day? Cursed the day that his mother gave birth to him. Why does he describe the day that his mother gave birth as his day? The answer is because there's no difference between you and your mother. On the day of his birthday, look at this, this is an incredible thing over here. On his birthday, he cursed the day. And as an extension, a person should fast on the day that his father died. Now let me ask you a question. By extension, is this also a proof, or is this also an indication that the person should observe a birthday? Think about this. The average person who has a birthday party, who is the birthday party in celebration of? All of you have grandchildren who have birthday parties. And you go to the birthday party, and light the candles, and they blow out the candles, and give them a toy. Who are you celebrating, Rabbi Issa? Who do you celebrate when you go to a birthday party? You're celebrating the child's birthday, correct?
Yeah.
That's a mistake.
Yep.
When you go to a birthday party, you know who the Baal Simcha is? The mother. That's the one who gets the present. So the next time you go to your grandchild's birthday party, who do you give a present to? Two presents. You give a little toy for $5 to the child. He doesn't know the difference. And to your daughter, you give a nice big present. The birthday party, according to the Sefer Hasidim, is today is the day when something very significant happened to me. People don't think of it like that. When you go to someone's birthday party, it's all about me. Me, myself, and I. Oh, today is my birthday. And if they're fortunate, their parents are alive and the parents are happy. And it's an afterthought to even acknowledge that, do you know that today was the day that you gave birth to this person? And when that happened, you had tremendous simcha, you brought into this world a new child. The child didn't know what was going on that day. When the baby was born, he was crying. If he was lucky, if he was healthy enough to cry. Okay, he was crying. It was a non-event for the child. Didn't know what was going on. They said that a child that's born doesn't have no clue, can't see. No one really knows how many days does it take until a child can see. They have no concept of, they just have light. Their minds are working. No one knows really what's going on in their minds until they mature, until they comprehend what's going on, they can see. So what really happened on the birthday? It was a simcha for the parents. When you have a birthday party, the same way over here that the Sefer Chasidim is enlightening us that Yirmiya and Iyov, they cursed their mother's day. They weren't cursing themselves. The context, the Sefer Chasidim twists the whole pasuk upside down. Who was Yirmiya cursing? He was cursing the day that my mother gave birth to me, not me. The day that my mother released me into this world, he cursed her womb, it says in the pasuk. He cursed the womb.
There are a few psukim there.
The Dal say, bit of the few psukim there describing. And most of the psukim are describing his mother's womb and the experience of Leda. And then at the end, he curses himself. So Sefer Chasidut says there's inconsistency. And he says, no, there's no inconsistency. It's all the same. It's all the same. Your mother and you are all the same. So that means, and then he takes that and extrapolates that. Therefore, on the day when your mother dies, you got to be sad, because it's really you. You and your mother are one and the same. So we don't want to end off here with bad stuff here. So we can extrapolate this, go the other way around. And since there are such happy occasions, we make birthday parties all the time, we should realize that the birthday party is not really for the person. It is for the mother. Yom Huledes Es Paro.
Right.
Who gave birth to Paro? Was it Basia? Who gave birth to Paro? What?
What do you mean, who gave birth to Paro?
Who gave birth to Paro? Paro's daughter. Paro's daughter went out to be Rechetzes Al Hayar. Vayhi Bayamahim Vayamos Melech Mitzrayim. Melech Mitzrayim died. And Vayakam Melech Chodosh Asher Lo Yoda Es Yosef. Who was the Melech Chodosh Asher Lo Yoda Es Yosef? And then it says, Paro Basya, Bas Paroi, Reholich Rechetz Al Hayar. How could Paro's daughter defy her father? How dare she? Well, if it wasn't her father, his nephew. She can say to her nephew, go jump in the lake. When it says that Basya, Bas Paro, is the Bas Paro, the same Paro as Vayoka Melech Chodosh Al Mitzrayim Asher Lo Yoda Es Yosef? Is it the same? Then it says Basya, Bas Paro, Reichetz Al Hayar. Whoever said the Bas Paro of Basya is the same Paro who is the new king in town. The new king in town. When was the new king in town, Taka, born? He was born, Chazal say, Yoim Huledes Es Paro. So I'm suggesting to you over here is, Yoim Huledes Es Paro was a birthday party, not for Paro. I'm telling you crazy stuff here. My father used to say to me all the time, Purim Torah. He would say to me, when I would say things like this, he would say to me, Purim Torah. But here's my question. The numbers add up. The numbers add up. Because we said this on the two Fridays ago. Let me explain to you this idea, based on the Sefer Chasidim. Paro, when it says in the Pasuk, Yoim Huledes Es Paro. Who was born on that? On that day when Paro's Yoim Huledes Es Paro, the Sar HaMashkin was reinstated. Now, let's understand, that set things up for Yosef. What does it mean, Yoim Huledes Es Paro? So remember, if we go back two Fridays ago, it means Paro's birthday party. I told you, not necessarily, I'll tell you two other Perushim. It means the anniversary of his rise to Malchus. Yoim Huledes was January 20th. Okay, the day when he took over, when he became the king, the anniversary of his coronation. And then I told you another Pshat. The day when Paro had a child, the crown prince was born. An heir was born to Paro. It was the day, Yoim Huledes, it's like when William had his first child, okay? Then the second, whatever, one of the royals has a baby. Wow, right? The whole world is top news of the day. When the crown prince was born, the heir was born to Paro. Yoim Dei Huledes Es Paro. That child, when that happened, there was a big party. The Sar HaMashkin was reinstated. And then that led to Yosef's release from prison, led to Yosef becoming the Mishnah LeMelech. And now that Paro died and the crown prince came into office and he says, Asher Lo Yoda Es Yosef. He looks at Yosef and says, Yosef, you only exist because of me. Because when I was born, my dad made a party. And at that party, the Sar HaMashkin was reinstated. And that Sar HaMashkin recommended you be put into position. So therefore, the Melech Chodosh Asher Lo Yoda Es Yosef had no Akaris HaTov to Yosef, because he looked at Yosef, the only reason why you exist is because of me. Now if that is correct, let's understand who gave birth to this crown prince. Who was the one, the mother? It was Pyro's wife. Pyro's wife. Now let's face it, when Pyro died.
You're mixing up a lot of years.
I'm sure we can work it out.
No, because historically speaking, because of the years are so far apart, it's unbelievable.
You're having me with some facts and some details. We're on to something very good here. Okay, we're on to something very good here. There is a major question in the Mefarshim, and that is, how in the world was the daughter of Pyro able to openly defy Pyro? What kind of chutzpah is this? Pyro says, called Habein Hayiloid Hayoira Tashlihu. Throw the kid into the Nile. Get rid of this kid. Right. Get rid of. She takes a kid out of the water. She brings him home and she keeps him and he grows up. Excuse me? What in the world is going on over here? All the commentators talk about this. There's some really, really beautiful chidushim on this whole yisoid. But one of the answers can be, we have to work things out, is that she had veto power over Pyro. How did she have veto power over Pyro? She was older than, when it says Pyro and Bas Pyro, it's not the same Pyro. It was his older sister. His older sister. Okay, let's say like that. We have to get into really older sister. Right, the previous Pyro. The previous Pyro was dead. It says, Vayomos Melech Mitzrayim, Vayoko Melech Chodosh, Asher Lo Yoda Es Yosef. Right? There's a new Pyro in town. Okay, now, did the wife also die? Did the wife also die? Not necessarily. Did Pyro also have a daughter? Had a daughter, so there could have been a Bas Pyro. That Bas Pyro was his older sister. So, don't tell me what to do. I'm older than you. I'm also a royal lineage. Now, if that is true, the two different Pyros, and now let's go back and understand Yoim Huledes es Pyro, you're celebrating a birthday. Yoim Huledes es Pyro. Okay, I'm mixing up too many things.
I'm mixing up too many things.
The Yom HaSmelech Mitzrayim is long after. It's way after Moshe was put in.
No, not necessarily.
The
Das Bali Tosfos came. He says that the Yom Huledes es Pyro, the baby that was born, right, was the Yoko Melech Chodosh Asher Lo Yoda Es Yosef. He was born.
Yosef was alive.
Why can it be? It's not so far. That day's not so far. From far.
Yosef was 80 years. He was.
They were there for 210 years.
Yeah.
They were there for 210 years.
Yeah.
So that we're now holding at the very, very end. He had to be then saying 200 years old. He had to then be. Yosef was there for 30. Yosef. This took place when? How many? 20 years later. This event took place. Not 20. 13 years later. Okay, I don't know the answer. We have to go back to the sources. Only thing I want to point out is, at least the one thing to take away from this is, the Sefer Chasidim over here talks about this idea of the birth. And the birth automatically connects the child to the parent, to the mother. And that's what we learn in the Pesukim. And therefore that opens up our mind to appreciate that on a birthday very much connects to a mother. A person's birthday, you're connecting to a mother. If that's the case, when you study birthdays in Tanakh, it opens up the possibility that the significance of the day relates to the mother, not necessarily to the person who is being born. Right. On this day, Yoim Huledes es Pyro, someone is born. If someone was born, that means there's a mother. Who is that mother? Define me that mother. And now tell me, does that mother reappear somewhere else in the narrative? Maybe yes, maybe no. The dates are impossible. Yoim who led us, we always talk, is it a kedai to celebrate a birthday? It's a very popular Jewish topic. Is it kedai to celebrate a birthday? The Sefer Hasidim opens up a new facet. When you celebrate a birthday, the main person to celebrate is the mother, not the person. The person is hechet himsa to celebrate the mother. Now, there's only one birthday in the whole Torah. Only one birthday. And that's Paro. And that's all debate. Goyim celebrate birthdays, not Jews. Who says that's pshat? Maybe the Torah is Megala. Birthday, something to a birthday. Now, there's only one birthday in the Torah. Yoim, who led that says Paro. I ask you, who is this mother? Who is the mother that gave birth to this Paro? Now, let's go and analyze all of the Midrashim, do a frantic search, Sefer Chochma, and go through all the details. Does this mother appear in any Medrash anywhere? Does she reappear somewhere, somehow, some form? And does that play into any of the stories in Chumash and Nach, which there'll be something to learn from and derive a new facet of knowledge in our appreciation of what happened at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, or for that matter, anything that happened in the world? Shlomo HaMelech, who did he marry? Bas Paro. Ooh, Bas Paro. Everything is always about Bas Paro, the daughter of Paro. Obviously, it's a different Paro, right? And by the way, this whole story of Sadi over here is also, some want to say it's Shlomo HaMelech. And you talk about birthdays. Okay, so we got to figure out what exactly here is going on.
You know, yeah. In the Egyptian dynasty, the king married his sister.
Ooh, you see this? Okay. Okay, so he's opening up new things here.
This I know.
Married his sister.
Why did she go down to the water? Because Paro thought he was a lil.
You just said a mouthful. If what you said is correct, that a king married a sister, everything that I just said is back in play. Okay? Everything that I just said is back in play. If you're telling me that he married his sister and then Paro died, that means his wife didn't die. And the child, this the dates don't add up. Rabbi Mersky is correct, but the Chazal say this. This is something I saw before.
Don't forget, Yosef was when Yosef was 28.
It's almost.
The old letter says Paro. Yosef was 28.
It would have to be 200
Yosef
years.
Dies, it's 82 years later by Yoko Melech
Chodosh. I didn't make this up. I know where I saw this. I'm going to go back and look this up because I'm going to go back and look this up. I know where I saw this. Exactly where I saw this. Yoim Huledes es Paro. Relates back by Yoqam Melech Chodosh, Asher Lo Yoda Es Yosef, relates back to the moment of Yoim Huledes Es Paro.
The dating on the calendar is that by Yomos Melech Mitzrayim, Vayan Hu happens to be on the calendar Tutankhamun.
Okay.
Happens to be at that time because he died at 18.
Are you sure about what you just said, that the king married his sister?
Yeah. No. He's right in terms of history.
So that's explosive. Everything I said now is back on the table, Rabbi Sai. Everything else is back on the table. Because that means when Paro died, the wife didn't die.
Even in the 20th century.
And if the wife didn't die, the wife didn't die and she had a daughter. And so the wife didn't die, so that wife was also a Bas Paro. Because it goes, the hierarchy goes also about. So she
was the sister of Bidya.
She was the sister of if he married his sister,
right,
so she's still called a Bas Paro, a different Paro. The dates don't add up, but then yeah, there's a lot going on here. We have to work it out, but at the very least, we opened up a new hole here, a new idea, which we got a new can of worms. We have to go for it.
As long as you realize worms are trained.
You give bracha to people.
What?
You can give a bracha to someone you have a birthday.
It's the mother. You go to the mother.
Mother here went to the king and said, "I, this kid is my brother."
You're right. You're right. Because of what X.